You ready? I'd like to call to order our February 7th, 2024 meeting of the Ventura Port District Board of Commissioners. We will start with a Pledge of Allegiance. Harbor Master, if you would lead us, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible.
Well done, thank you. Let me do a roll call, please.
Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
Commissioner Brennan?
Present.
Commissioner Rainey?
Here.
Vice Chair Gardena?
Here.
Chair Blumenberg?
Here.
Thank you.
All right. Next is the adoption of the agenda. Commissioners, what do you think of tonight's agenda?
Move approval as presented.
Second. Yep.
Tie goes to the runner.
I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda as presented. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed. The agenda is adopted. All right, next is approval of the minutes from our January 17th meeting. And commissioners wanted to point out the key points that were captured from our discussion about the goals and objectives. So thoughts on those minutes? Thoughts, or maybe maybe a motion to approve, or if okay. We don't approve, we can edit.
I'll move as presented.
I'll second.
All right, I have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes, and that assumes that the notes capturing our discussions of the objectives was well done. So all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the minutes from January 17th are approved. All right, we'll move on to public communications, an opportunity for the public to testify on any items that are not on tonight's agenda. We unfortunately do not have anybody in the audience tonight. Do we have anybody online? Nobody online. I'm really going to get flustered if somebody shows up. We'll close public comments and move on to our closed session report. Council, turn it over to you.
Chair Blumenberg, members of the board. Board met in closed session under section 5456.9 regarding the lawsuit listed in the agenda. Board got a report from council and gave direction to council, but no reportable action was taken.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to board communications, an opportunity for the commissioners to give brief reports on port-related issues. Anybody have anything to share tonight?
Just wanted to thank the staff for the memos regarding the storm. It's really helpful to be kept up to date about that and any other updates that were going on, so thank you for that.
I'll share a couple of things. Number one, I attended the city's Ventura's General Planning Advisory Committee meeting last week. One of the things that caught my attention was the synergy of the city's plans for parks. And we discussed a little bit about how Parcel 5, our goals for Parcel 5 and how that meshes with the city's goals. And they also have a goal of... this is specifically an open space, by the way. They also had a goal about parcel or creating a tighter partnership with the Park Service. And I mentioned to them our long-term strategy discussion about potentially using Parcel 8 or a portion of Parcel 8 and working with the Park Service. So seems like our goals and the city's goals, at least coming out of this committee, are meshing. And then on Saturday, I sat through the city's goal planning session. And a couple of things came up there that were interesting is the city's recognition of need to dredge the Ventura Keys. And we clarified that the Port District is going to dredge the kind of the entrance. What's the poinsettia? Is that the right? What's that area? How do I describe the area right out in the corner by the Barranca?
Yeah, Marina Park or Pierpont Basin.
Yeah, Pierpont Basin. So clarified that we're going to dredge Pierpont Basin. In fact, that's on their agenda tonight. And we're also going to dredge over Inner Harbor by kind of across from the Holiday Inn. So made it clear that the city owns the keys. So hopefully they understood that. I think they did. And then also a lot of good discussion led by Bill McReynolds about how community development is so important and how they need to grow that overall pie. So I would agree with that. And I think Port District's doing our best to contribute. Last thing I wanted to say is reading the Ventura Breeze, our local paper, and nice to see all the coverage for Portside. Portside's opening a lot of little businesses, a lot of small businesses, and they're getting good coverage. So great to see. I think their pop-up market, unfortunately, probably got washed out the other day, but they got another one coming up February 17th. So Portside's doing a lot of good stuff. All right. So with that, we'll close board communications. Move on to another page. And move on to our staff and general manager reports. Brian, you're going to take that one remotely?
Yeah, I've got a couple of items here to share with the board and with the public. Visitors are invited to celebrate the Lunar New Year in Ventura Harbor Village with a dragon scavenger hunt taking place this Saturday, February 10th from 2 p.m. Guests can participate in the hunt for red dragon envelopes containing lucky $2 bills and a $10 gift card to Harbor Village restaurants. Additionally, one envelope holds the grand prize, a 1 hour of free rental aboard a dragon pedal boat at Ventura Boat Rentals. We're honoring Black History Month on President's Day weekend, February 17th, with a special chalk art demonstration by artist Randall Williams. The art will feature a portrait and powerful quote by Dr. Mae Jemison, who is an American engineer, physician, and former NASA astronaut, who is the first African-American woman to travel into space. Through meaningful art, we aim to foster dialogue and appreciation for diversity in our community. Our annual tenant recognition event returns on Leap Day this year, which is Thursday, February 29th. This is for those businesses, restaurants, retailers, and entertainment-related businesses at the village. Deep Sea Wine Tasting is graciously offered to host the event. And our business owners will be recognized for reaching major milestones. We'll have some coffee and breakfast for them served, plus those in attendance will enjoy live music, fresh flowers, and some customized gifts. As the winter storms sweep through, marketing is rolling out the Winter Warm Yourself Seaside campaign to highlight the Harbor Village as the perfect destination for dining, relaxing, and shopping for cozy essentials. Each year, the list expands. In 2024, there are 24 creative ways to warm up along the waterfront. And I would be remiss if I didn't wish Todd Mitchell a happy birthday today, our Senior Business Operations Manager. And with that, Chair, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Brian. Happy birthday, Todd. Commissioners, any thoughts on that report? All right. We will close the General Manager's report. Thank you. Move on to our consent agenda. Tonight we have two items on the consent agenda, termination of a lease with Sugar Lab and then the award of contract for the New Harbor launch ramp. Again, the consent agenda typically voted on in a single vote, non-controversial. Commissioners, thoughts on the consent agenda?
I'll move the consent agenda if there's no public comment.
I'll second.
And so before I take that roll call vote, I'll look around the room and still no public in the room and online, nobody online. So we have no public comment. So I'll take the vote, roll call vote. All in favor of approving the consent agenda, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none opposed, the consent agenda is approved. All right, we'll move on to our standard agenda. First agenda item is award of the Harbor Village Restroom Enhancement Project. Brian?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask Todd to present item one.
Thank you, Brian. Excuse me. Commissioners, we actually have two items here. One is to accept the low bid from SCT Construction in the amount of $450,000. That actually is in excess of the amount budgeted for the two restroom improvements as per our CIP. Therefore, we're also requesting approval for a budget adjustment for the five-year capital improvement plan to increase that number to $500,000. The During the engineering and architecture work that was done for the restrooms, we identified that there was more cast iron pipes connecting those restrooms to the adjacent plumbing fixtures. Whenever we're doing that sort of a remodel, it's obviously well worth our time to do the extra work to remove 40-year-old cast iron pipes from the walls and floors. That increased the amount that we expected to need. Our architectural firm, Rasmussen, determined that the cost to do the project should be about $445,000. Our low bid came at $450,000, which is fantastic. However, we still need to ask for a little more money to do some construction management. That project will be overseen primarily by Rasmussen, which they have done for all the other restroom projects that we've had done. And obviously, then they've done great work in supervising that. And then we're also anticipating we should probably have a bit of a buffer, maybe $20,000, in case we end up determining that we need to go further into the walls to remove even more cast iron once things are exposed. One nuance of the project, these two restrooms are not ADA compliant and cannot be. They're both constrained by being adjacent to elevators. So these were the last ones in terms of the priorities for the public facing restrooms in the village, but they're now being done. They definitely need it in order to keep up with the aesthetic we've created elsewhere. Love to make them ADA compliant, but that won't be a part of this project. Happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners, questions?
I don't have any questions, but given the nature of the work, I think the contingency is a very good idea and would be happy to make a motion to approve pending public comments.
Pending public comments. And do we have any public comments here? Public comments online? We have no public comments. So if there's no other questions, I got a motion to approve.
Happy to second. And then I have a question. Remind me the difference between what we have in the budget versus what you're asking us to.
The overall budget for the two projects are actually identified independently in the CIP budget was 445.
Okay.
So that didn't cover any soft costs, meaning having the architect do the drawings and the architect oversee the actual construction, and didn't have any contingency. So if we had no soft costs, we'd be only 5,000 over budget.
Right.
But with the soft costs, we're 35 over budget, and then 20 as contingency.
Okay, and I know I ask this question every time the budget comes up, but you guys are bringing what I think of as a reforecast or an adjusted budget in February. So we'll see what kind of impact that has, along with other things that might be impacting the revenue flow.
Correct. So we'll be bringing back the mid-year budget adjustment actually at the next meeting. That's the intent. We've already sat down and looked at what we anticipate. This is not going to be a deal breaker in terms of our proposal. Obviously, the adjustments are proposal by staff for the board to comment and direct us on. But it's not skies falling. It's well within our ability to manage.
And I will just also note the irony of one ADA accommodation, an elevator, interfering with another ADA accommodation back. So, unfortunate.
Just a comment. When you present the budget, can you also identify if the funds are going to be derived from fund balance, or will they be derived from expenditures not being undertaken in this year's budget?
I'm happy to answer that. It looks like Brian might even be oh no, I was going to say Brian can comment as well, but generally we don't present it in quite that light. It's usually like our top line revenue is one component of the budget in the first portion of the report, and then all of our expenses, operating expenses, the second part, and then the third part is capital, which is actually generally affecting reserves, and we have an unrestricted reserve, and that's where that comes from.
Commissioner Rainey, the change that you, if you authorize this change tonight, you will see it reflected in the capital improvement budget, which then, depending on other adjustments that we bring forward to you, will then impact up or down the reserves.
Well, the board letter says the additional expense is offset through the deferment of other capital improvement projects.
That is true. If you approve them. Again, you have to approve the mid-year budget adjustment for that to actually be.
Well, with this approval, this will be in the budget, and it won't be a proposal within our mid-year budget adjustment. It is in the budget.
It is in
this,
the budget.
Right. That is, Commissioner Stevens, that is correct.
I still move approval.
And I think I still have a second.
It's still a second.
And that motion and second is to accept the low bid and to approve this budget adjustment. That's it?
The higher bid.
Except, well, no, it says this was the low bid from FCT.
Oh, the correct. Lowest bid, but it went above the recommend. So, yeah, no, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut.
The lowest of three bids, yes.
That's not what you're here. All right, so we'll do a roll call vote for awarding this, accepting the low bid, awarding the contract, and approving the budget. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none opposed. You can award the contract to FCT, and we have approved the budget adjustment.
Just want to clarify, that was a voice vote and not a roll call vote. But oh. That's appropriate.
Thank you. Thank you.
In the room.
Potato, potato.
I like it. Council's keeping me in line. All right. We'll move on to standard agenda item number two. Brian?
Yeah, for item number two, I would like both Todd and Tom to provide presentation regarding the rejection of bid.
Thank you, Brian. In the case here, this is the second piece of the project for the public launch ramp project. Two projects were initially granted grant funds by the Division of Boating Waterways. The board has already approved the first project to moving forward, which was with Blue Water. That was on the consent calendar. We also bid separately the land work, which is the washdown stations here. There's going to be ADA improvements made there, upgrades to the drainage system and the replacing the grates, and then also the washdown stations themselves. We had an engineer's estimate, and the bid came back at nearly 100% higher than the estimate. That was rather surprising and disappointing. We also only received one bid despite having seven businesses attend the pre-construction job walk. When we asked the engineer to do an independent assessment, he made some phone calls, checked in, and there seems to be one line item that's way out of line, which was the demolition and haul away of the old concrete and the old washdown equipment. I spoke to the Division of Boating and Waterways. They said it is possible that you could move money around because there is enough money to do this, but it's not in the public's interest to waste money on a project where you don't believe that that's appropriate expenditure of the public's money. In our minds, the best resolution here is to rebid, try to encourage more bids. If they all come back $200,000, then our engineer is wrong. But I don't believe that that's the way this is going to go. So that's the recommendation here, is to ask for that. And then Tom is going to comment on our legality and right to reject bids. Tom?
Okay, so if you're doing competitive bidding, then you're required to accept the lowest bidder. Except if the bidder is non-responsive or the bid, I'm sorry, if the bidder is not reliable or if the bid is not responsive. So the way to keep that distinction in mind, which I almost didn't do, is that responsibility goes with the bidder. That's the character and reliability and so forth of the bidder. Responsiveness refers to the bid and whether it says in the bid everything that you have requested and correctly says that without any errors. There are a couple of exceptions to that too. The board can specify in its notice of inviting bids that minor irregularities can be waived by the board. And it can also specify that the board may reject all the bids for any reason or no reason, and the board's allowed to do that. Now, in this case, the staff report asked for a rejection of the bid as non-responsive. We agree that this bid, by being so wildly away from a reasonable price, is not responsive. But it would be more typical in this situation to reject all the bids. And of course, there's just one in this case, to reject all one bid pursuant to the power that the district expressed in the notice inviting bids. So you can do it either way.
All right, Council, thank you for that explanation. Do we have any public comments on this item? Anybody online? No, nobody in the building, nobody online. Todd,
just
really
quick, I should have added that the bidder has been notified of the board's action and did receive a copy of the packet. So I don't comment. Yep. And
right. Comment. That's a good point. Commissioners, questions, comments?
Only looking at it from we used to call it the engineering estimate, $7,285, and that the bid was 90, am I reading that right? 95,000. Yeah, but I have to do it again. Now my question is, do we foresee that there will be more than a single bidder?
Yes. So again, we had seven contractors attend the pre-job bid meeting. The gap between the pre-bid meeting and the actual opening of the bids included Christmas and New Year's. There's an entirely decent possibility that had an impact on the decision to bid. We did have our construction management firm independently reach out to some of the bidders who didn't bid and ask, if we do this again, would you be interested? The answer was generally affirmative. So I think we have a decent shot. I think a lot of it depends on workload in terms of preparing the bid, workload and the timing of when the project is going to get done. And we'll just have to cross our fingers, but we'll also ensure that we do the maximum amount of outreach we can to try and entice more participants.
And I might add that certainly Jensen Design is one of the largest engineering companies in the county, and the width and breadth of what they do and what the amount of contractors they touch, I would have to agree. I think certainly going out to bid or looking at if Jim said, hey, we can get more people to bid next go around, I think we're much better off for it. I mean, sometimes you almost think that 95,000, maybe an extra zero got in there. I mean, we looked at 7,500. They might want to put 9,500. Did they have, well, they can do that when they bring the bid back. So anyway, that being said, I'm happy to move the item as presented.
Chris, did you have a comment?
I'll second the motion, okay. But my question for you is, how long is this going to take you to rebid? And is this going to throw construction into the summer months?
It's ready to go tomorrow. So it will re-advertise tomorrow. It has the potential to cross over that line, in which case we may be in a situation where we award and construct in the fall. The grant, we've already requested and gotten approval of an extension to complete the work under the grant. So I think we have until next spring, 2025, to complete. So we're not in hot water with the granting agency. It would certainly be better, but it's not, we won't let it interrupt the boat users.
Thank you.
All right, so I have a motion and a second to reject the bid for the boat washdown station replacement project. We'll do a voice vote on this one. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none opposed, we concur with your recommendation to reject the bid. We
Thank
approve
you.
That request. All right, let's move on to...
Can I ask a quick clarifying question of Tom? Tom, do we need... We're good? You gave sort of two scenarios that the board could take. Are we happy with?
Yes, I think that's fine.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Just to clarify, we move the recommended action.
Right. Yes.
Great. Correct.
Which was to reject the bid as non-responsive.
Yes.
And I believe that's called for here.
Just want to make sure.
All right, we'll move on to agenda item number 3, which is award of a bid for the Inner Harbor dredging. Brian?
Yeah, on this one, I'll have Todd provide presentation.
Thank you again, Brian. Well, it is time to get the Inner Harbor dredged. As we all, I think, know, last January storm events contributed an egregious amount of sediments input into the Pierpont Basin and into the sub channel as well. We were fortunate enough, actually, that the city did a hydrographic survey all the way to Marina Park just a couple of weeks ago, and they shared the data with us. And we can, although they didn't go into the stub channel, they didn't need to, we can see the Pierpont Basin is exactly what it was the last time we looked. So these recent storms have not contributed any more sediment into the basin. So I think we have a pretty good handle on that. The stub channel, maybe a bit more. It's hard to say. The velocity of the rain might actually be pushing some sediment out. We'll find out. The second area is the Holiday Inn Express. And again, going back to what John will talk about later, the storm events here in the last few weeks have created a lot of water velocity there. We don't really have maybe the best feel for what we're up against here, but the actual size of the dredge area is actually quite small. The RFP lists 45,000 cubic yards in Area 1 and 3,000 cubic yards here. It's a pretty expensive MOB fee at $750,000. That is higher than we had anticipated. But it was a competitive bid, and the other four bids were in the $3 million range. So we're getting the best price. And it was essential that we went through the competitive bid process in order to have an opportunity to ask FEMA for assistance, which we have been working on. Unfortunately, the FEMA staff people we talk to say, effectively, spend the money you need to spend, come talk to us after, and we'll tell you how much money we're going to help you out with. But dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's in terms of all the responsibilities, including having Lagerlof prepare an addendum to the contract language, specifically calling out all the requirements to meet the federal standards for receiving a grant from FEMA. That's all been taken care of and rolled into this. So at this point, I think we've done everything we can do to be prepared to receive funding from FEMA. One nuance here is that initially we anticipated funding our portion of the dredging from 50% from this year's budget, 50% from the reserve, and then in relatively expedient time getting money back from FEMA in time to replenish the reserve. That is probably not realistic. Seeing how slowly they're moving, it's very likely that the dredging reserve will remain depleted for much longer, which will mean that although that doesn't necessarily affect this year's budget, it's going to have a detrimental effect next year until we get that money replenished. Although, again, I'm not asking for a budget adjustment here because of that, but it is going to have an impact that we should be mindful of. However, there's still a need to do this, and I still think we have a very good chance of receiving funding from FEMA at the pace that they feel like handing it back, and I do recommend that we move forward with this.
Okay, before I open it up to the commissioners, let me just ask for public comments. No public comments in person. Anybody online? No public comments online. So we'll close that, and I'll turn it over to the commissioners. Chris?
So when was the last time we dredged the Inner Harbor?
2021.
And before that?
Ooh, probably 2016, 2015, before I got here.
Okay.
I will say there's a nuance to the last dredging. That was done under an emergency permit, you'll recall. The Coastal Commission capped the amount of material we could remove at that time. And they're in that base of the Pierpont Basin. There's 40,000 cubic yards. We would love to move, but we're not allowed to at that time. Another 40,000 is what we're talking about moving here.
Yeah.
In the fiscal impacts, I do discuss if the river mouth is open, we could, you know, go above and beyond, and the contract would allow for that. But we have to really be thinking about the fiscal impact of that, and I'm not sure we're ready to comment on that tonight. I think that's maybe something we talk about at the mid-year budget when we look at the full five-year picture. But we were fine enough, we'll call it, with 40,000 in the basin, and maybe we're fine enough leaving it that way. But yeah,
I'm surprised to hear that you thought that the recent storms did not add to the sediment there. I mean, is that a hunch, or I mean, have you gone out there and
no,
measured
well,
it? Or?
The survey identifies that, you know. Like,
well, even 2 weeks ago is outdated in some respects.
That's true. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I guess I was more referring to the sand that was the storms that were blasting west side of Marina Park.
Okay.
There probably is some more sand in the very, very top northeast corner of that basin where the sand was literally pushed through. But everywhere the survey could identify, which is, you know, below water, there was, you know, the contour lines didn't move at all.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Todd, if you're good, do we pre-test those sediments? Are they, you know, you said something about moving it down to, if the river was running, we able to do beach application for that?
Yes. So the inner harbor material is tested every 3 years. It's a requirement of our Coastal Commission permit. The area in front of the Holiday Inn Express, that material isn't technically inner harbor material. It came from the farm. So in conversation with the Southern California Dredge Material Management Team, which is a multi-agency consortium of Corps of Engineers, EPA, Coastal Commission, Fish and Wildlife, you know, the whole rigmarole, they told us what they wanted done for testing. The testing was completed in September. Reports went to DMMT over the fall. We have explicit permission to move the material and place it on the beach.
Well, that's great news. I was thinking the other way around, because especially if it's coming off the fields, but obviously the protocols have been followed for the testing. So are we able to put it on surface known, or I mean, we've been, I mean, the erosions continue. We have king tide here coming Friday, 6.8, and looks like a 10-foot swell. So I'm wondering if that's an opportunity to reload the beach area that we saw last meeting, those pictures.
So in the grand scheme of things, the inner harbor material is volume-wise is almost nothing, and it's also considerably higher percentage of fine grain material. The channel, the navigation channel and sand trap, the Corps has authorized 600,000 cubic yards to be dredged. In a general rule, about one-third of that sticks to the beach, so 200,000 cubic yards. The inner harbor material is about, we're talking 48,000, and probably maybe a fifth of that will stick, so 20,000 cubic yards. It's going to be a much, much smaller amount of this material actually physically landing on the beach and staying. It'll still be in the system. But it won't be a huge contributor to the beach placement. The beach will basically be done, and the pipe will probably be somewhere near surface knoll. This project will start. It'll run for 2 or 3 days, and then that'll be it. And they'll pack up the pipe and go home.
Thank you.
Just, I'm trying to piece together the money part of it. We were celebrating Carvajal helping us secure, and your great work last year when you went to DC, securing a money in the federal budget. Now, of course, they haven't approved a federal budget yet, but how does that fit into, I mean, we're seeking grant money from FEMA, it's our, so how does that fit into that?
Let me jump in here real quick. So, Vice Chair, so the federal monies are used for the entrance channel, which is considered a federal navigational channel. This item tonight relates all to inner harbor activities in terms of dredging, which is a district obligation. earlier when there was discussion about the keys, I think when the chair was talking about one or both of the meetings he attended recently, that the keys fall within the city's jurisdiction. So dredging inside the keys would be at the expense of the city. In terms of timing, though, there is some benefit from a mobilization perspective in that the federal contract for annual entrance channel and sand trap dredging will be occurring fairly shortly, and there will be a dredge here. Of course, it had to be competitively bid, but I think the bid process determined by way of the bid costs that having somebody here already certainly helped with the mobilization costs on the whole. So two separate activities, Inner Harbor, Port District, Keys City, Entrance Channel, Federal.
So when we receive money from the federal government, quote unquote, for dredging, it specifically only allows us to use that money for the navigable harbor entrance.
Yeah, and one nuance, we don't ever receive that money. So I would call it securing of funds for Ventura Harbor, but the efforts of our chair is our dredge liaison and Todd and our team in D.C. Work to have Congress appropriate money to the Army Corps of Engineers, and then the Army Corps of Engineers conducts the bidding specific to our harbor and others. So the effort in D.C. is always to make sure that we're fully dredged in terms of the entrance channel for commerce and safety and our business as a whole. But the federal government does not have responsibility for the Inner Harbor dredging. So we never receive those monies. Mm-hmm. The other dollars that Todd was referring to is we do maintain a dredging reserve fund that is $3 million, and a portion of that fund will be used to fund this activity. But we do need to replenish that fund back up to the $3 million mark. And again, that'll be the subject of upcoming discussions in terms of timing.
Thanks for the clarification.
Sure.
So for clarification, the distinction is that the Army Corps of Engineer does the outside and FEMA and California Governor's Office of Emergency Services does the inside.
Well, one more little nuance. The only reason FEMA is involved this time is because the Inner Harbor dredging material was a result of a disaster. So there is normally buildup of Inner Harbor materials every 5, 6, 7 years or so. I think it was to Commissioner Stevens' question earlier, how often is this done? This was accelerated in terms of the time to do it because of the disaster that was declared and the impacts to the harbor here. So in the case of the Inner Harbor, it's not normally or typically a FEMA activity. It is typically a Port District activity and a city activity in the Keys. But in this specific case, there were impacts to the harbor resulting from the storm activity from last year.
So looking at the cost of the project, it's $1.3 million with a potential of another $400,000. That's a pretty big chunk that could come out of our dredging reserve. What's the time frame that we have to replenish that reserve? Is there any? I know the reserve is mandated by some past litigation. Can we recoup that in a year, recoup that in 5 years? How quickly do we need to replenish?
Yeah,
I think Tom's prepared to give.
Yeah, I was going to say we asked Nagaroff to provide an opinion on that.
Okay.
The language of this judgment is not completely clear. It provides that you continue to withhold money from your operating income and put that in until it reaches $3 million. And that then you don't have to put any more money in, except if that money is used for dredging, then you need to replenishment. It's, as I say, it's not crystal clear, but my best interpretation of the meaning is that you go back to the same rate, the same cap that you had, which is each year you're only required to put into the dredging reserve 25% of your operating income. Only, I say.
only as
But I believe that cap still is in place. And if you take out more than that, then you pay it back over multiple fiscal years.
I'll just say that 25% of our operating revenue is paid all back in 1 year.
Okay, that was my next question. Thank you. All right, different question. Maybe our harbor master can address this one. Morris is the barge that they'll use, right? That's a pretty big barge. If we bring that inside the Pierrepont Basin or inside the Inner Harbor up by Holiday Inn Express, what kind of hazard to navigation does that create? What kind of restrictions on boaters does that create?
There's temporary interruptions. However, it's been done several times over. It can fit back there. It's a tight squeeze when it gets to the end. Typically, the dredge company will work with us and the boaters to maintain egress, or in the instance where it gets back to that area of the farm, they'll give advance notice, and anyone that really has an urgent need to leave their slip during that time can relocate, and we assist with that. But generally speaking, most of the boat traffic is not in that back area. Typically, that's weekend type traffic and light at best. So some nuances, and in the past, they've even sunk the pipe in certain locations to maintain dual egress. So when it's in the entrance, it's typically pass on one side.
That's a good point, because it's in addition to the barge, we typically have a floating pipe that's going all the way back to the beach. So you're saying they also have the option to sink that pipe, huh? Not seen that yet.
I think, you know, they look at what's the most efficient. They could do a lot of things that would prolong their time here. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's best to leave it floating. We leave that up to them, but we certainly are part of a discussion to make sure that the impact is the least for the boaters.
You brought up the, if the Santa Clara River mouth is open, we could do more dredging. I thought we got a new permit that was not, no longer restricted us to Inner Harbor dredging. It didn't tie us to that river being open. I thought we could dredge Inner Harbor when we needed to.
We can do the Inner Harbor, but just not as much as we want. So there is a upper threshold of 48,000 cubic yards that can be moved. And so the RFP was written with the assumption that the river mouth could close at any time. And we wrote it essentially, this is how much we would like to be able to move. Now, it is essentially the exact amount that we think the storm contributed anyway. It does make it a little cleaner. So FEMA will not reimburse us for a year's worth of accumulation, which is about 5,800 yards. So we might eat a little bit of, you know, where they'll say, well, that's for you to deal with. But pretty much the bulk of this is something that, that FEMA would help across the board on. If the river mouth's open, then it could be possible that we could move more material, but that would be entirely at our cost, and FEMA would not be coming to the rescue on any of the additional 400 and whatever thousand if we went that high, which we probably, I'm guessing, staff would not recommend when the time comes, the whole kit and caboodle, but that's a potential that could be moved if we really wanted a perfectly clean marina park or Pierrepont Basin.
Is there a cost cap built into the contract, or is it up to us to stay in touch with the dredger and monitor how much they've dredged, how much, therefore, they...
Well, they're not allowed to move more material than we tell them, so...
Okay, I mean, so that's how we control?
Yeah, there is a kind of a bit of a fuzzy area where the dredge just being on operates like a vacuum cleaner, and their really, really light sediment could be moved inadvertently. Just simply by passing through the pipe. No one will really be able to assess that until it's over, but I think what we can do is when we do the hydrographic pre-survey is make sure that we actually have a very good capture of the fluffy sediment excluded from the real sediment, and that'll help really dial it in.
We are
getting into the weeds.
Your survey will show you those layers?
If you use a low-frequency pathometer, it will actually
see through the fluffy stuff. The high frequencies will see the top of the fluffy stuff. So you can either use a dual frequency.
All right, now we're getting into the weeds. All right. But the I guess the point is, from a financial perspective, our exposure is controlled or capped at that one point. Looks like less than 1.8 million.
Yeah. Just, it's good advice to make sure that that's how it's written in the final document, but that's the intent.
That's a lot of money for us.
It is a lot of money.
Yeah. All right. I think that's all.
So to clarify, under the district dredging responsibilities, this would last us until 2029.
So the
question mark is future disasters, right?
If you average the 20-year deposition of material in the harbor, it's 5,800 yards per year. But the bigger question is, where is it landing? If it's landing at the mouth of the Barranca and blocking the access to the keys, the Ellison judgment kicks in and we must dredge. And it wouldn't matter how little or how much it was, we would have to unblock that. Having the city cooperate and maybe throw some money to do the other side of the boundary line would probably be a benefit to the district, because having like a escarpment of bluff, we know it's just going to end up in our side anyway. So if we can move the dredge 100 feet up further up the channel, and for whatever money the city will throw at it, that's probably worthwhile. But yeah, to answer your question, there's no certainty. And as Brian said, storms aside, it's really a question of where does the sediments go, and how significantly does it impact navigation and our obligation under the Ellison judgment.
So did you approach the city to see if they wish to be in any way involved in this effort?
I will say Richard's been banging a very big drum in the city hall. It's public works, so we all heard how they are with their money. I don't know the answer to that.
Any other questions? Anybody want to make a motion to move this item?
So move the item as presented.
Second.
I have a motion and a second for us to award a bid to Manson Construction in the amount of $1.3 million for Inner Harbor dredging. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none opposed, the recommended action is approved. Good. We will move on to our last, fourth and last item, which is discussions of these specific storms that have put a lot of dredge material in the harbor.
Mm. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to have John give the presentation tonight, but before he does that, I just wanted to thank all of our staff who very much worked together in both communicating and coordinating in advance. John was able to give us storm briefings on a daily basis as the storms came closer. As Vice Chair pointed out earlier, we were able to get out more communication to our staff, to our tenants, make some accommodations for the village specifically as the storms continued. We worked very closely with the Holiday Inn Express in advance and collaborated with the city to deliver sand and bags to the Holiday Inn Express. I was in direct communication with the general manager from the Holiday Inn Express in advance. And, thankfully it wasn't as bad as it could have been in terms of the total rainfall, but I think another good example of the collaboration communication across our tenants, our staff, and the city. And with that, I'll ask John to add a little detail to that.
Yeah, I think to what Brian said, it could have been a lot worse, but we appreciated the warnings that were given. Fortunately, they were given with a lot of advanced time, which allowed us to continue to build on what we've already been trying to implement here at the district, a more self-sufficient staff who's cohesive in our response. We have brought all the different departments in, and we've found that there's great value. In the past, it used to be two or three of us in the Harbor Patrol trucks driving around doing the best we could. Now we have a whole group support base, and each department's bringing in their talents, and sometimes it's just pure manpower. But this one was very, it was a real storm, like we expected before this El Nino event was even predicted. There was some visuals that I have on the board here. Is just at the beginning of the driveway, there's a Ventura County watershed weather station. And so the 4-day rain total for this last 4 days was 4.28 inches here at our parking lot. Pretty significant number, especially coming off the rain that we had before that. There's another slide with a 7-day, and the 7-day was 7.39 inches. So within 7 days, we had 7 inches of rain in the harbor. The area of the Holiday Inn Express flooded a couple of times, but with the extra efforts that we put into it and knowing that the second storm was coming, suggesting that they relocate their cars to a different parking lot. As Brian mentioned, worked with the city to get sandbags to harden that area so that there wasn't water intrusion. Those were all very successful, and you know, happy to report that there was no injuries during these events. There was no significant accidents. Damage was mostly contained to the roads and in that area of the Holiday Inn Express. There was still one vehicle that was left in that lot, but that vehicle was abandoned. It was not a current employee and or visitor, which was, we were able to confirm that after the fact. The beaches sustained your typical erosion from the waves. Fortunately, this time around, the debris is much smaller, not the gigantic trees that we had in years past. So that's an overhead that I took earlier today, and rather than the big, you know, 40-foot trees, a lot of that stuff will be able to be broken down and maybe even help build that base when the dredge comes, especially at the base of the dunes. So some of that might be stuff that we need to remove or relocate, and it might not. This isn't the peak season, so we have the ability to leave it in more of a natural state going into the next couple of weeks or a month till dredging starts. The dune area didn't really recede much more. In this area, it did a little bit. As was noted earlier, that's going to create some challenges with the dredging, but that's already been in the discussions, and Manson has always been very creative and thoughtful in the way that they put the sand on the beach. So the bigger you know, summary was that this was a good exercise once again for our staff. We really put a lot of focus on the messaging to the tenants in different forms, including the memos and the follow-up memos. That we thought that was very important to continue those. And then the general manager included ones based on the urgent warnings from the Weather Service to give the ability for the village tenants to close earlier or not open during those days to keep more people off the roads. So once again, no injuries, no significant incidents. Those were all wins in our minds, and our system is that much more cohesive. And as is our messaging. And so I think we're going to continue to work in that direction to be more self-sufficient, but certainly utilize the resources here and the outside resources, and continue our strong relationships with the National Weather Service and the other agencies that can give us good information and support during these events.
Thanks, John. Do we have any public comments on this item? No, nobody online, nobody with us. So I'll turn it over to the commissioners. Questions, comments? Chris?
Yeah, quick question, John. The Holiday Inn parking lot floods regularly, we might say, right, on these kind of events. Is there any solution to that, or is it something that we just have to live with given the terrain.
I'm clearly not an engineer, but I will say that there's other forces that work against that drain being able to drain. And that area, coincidentally, is the lowest point in the city, I've been told. And the drain is at the base of the revetment. So when there is a higher tide, there's more pressure on that drain, which would prevent it from relieving in a expedient manner. At the same time, in these last couple instances, we've already had so much rain that there wasn't any ability for that rain to absorb into the ground. It just pooled and flowed. And so it happens. It doesn't happen regularly. It happens, you know, when we have these larger events mixed with the high tides. We did see that the city was receptive to Brian's outreach and the district's asking of them to maintain the drains and or clear the drains. I think they cleared the drains several times during this event, and it still caused the pooling because of the 4 inches or 7 inches of rain, you know, pretty significant quantities.
And just who has liability for damages related to flooding when it affects a master tenant?
I would refer that to legal counsel.
I'm not sure that I can answer that at this time.
I think it would be helpful to know so that we can take whatever measures as a board that might be necessary to mitigate that risk. I don't think these kinds of storms are going to end anytime soon. So I think this issue is going to be on the docket, so to speak, going forward. So I'd love to know more about that.
We did look at a related question today, and I would say if it were insured, then it would probably fall to the district's insurance company. But I don't know that you have insurance against this kind of stuff.
And the lease itself doesn't move liability to the lessee.
I don't believe so.
Isn't there some indemnification of the district from a lease?
For flooding? Not that I'm aware of. But again, I haven't looked at that.
Okay.
Not on the liability, but I will say that part of our outreach was the suggestion that they implement moving those vehicles to the other lot. That was followed with in future rain events also with any type of 1.5 to 2 inches of rain, that's would be our suggestion. Mm-hmm. The difference, the first picture had multiple cars. Most of those cars ignored the tape that they had out there because they wanted to park proximate to the business. The second event, there was no cars there. So when they moved the cars, then that element of loss and property damage was removed.
Jessica, could you go back to the one picture that about three pictures ago where the standing water? No, well, where is that one and that one taken from? What's the perspective there?
Those are my photos. I'm taking those from the front seat of a Harbor Patrol truck pointing east.
That's the exit to the Holiday Inn Express as you're leaving the hotel to the right. Looking at that sign is where the lobby's at.
Okay.
There we're standing. John and I are standing. Same thing, looking east.
The southernmost section of the building.
Yeah, lobby from the southerly portion of the outside of the lobby.
So that was another added benefit of Brian coming in during the event, as he got a chance to experience and see that. Rarely do engineers and reach out to the Harbor Patrol to ask questions about, you know, the designs and stuff. But now Brian has firsthand experience of where the low points were in this particular area and can convey that to them.
I think I'd like to ask staff to look into what Jackie had brought up of, you know, what is the liability? I'd like to better understand that. And then I'll share that at the goal setting meeting with the city, City Public Works acting director mentioned that at one point they had looked at doing a surface ditch or trench from harbor area straight to the harbor. And he didn't know why that never occurred, but he said that was something that was studied. So it seems like it'd be a navigation hazard, but if there was a ditch, you could see where it would drain pretty fast right into the harbor. So
I just want to comment, John gave a presentation after our last board meeting. It was a Beacon meeting, and all the jurisdictions, City of Port Hueneme, the Port, the Oxnard, all the jurisdictions, members of Beacon gave a presentation. John was nice enough to come and give a presentation, show a number of the slides that we saw and that he presented to us. And it was very telling in regards to, and Jackie, your comment is so true. Everybody said the same thing. This is not going to be a, this is not a 150,000 year storm. It's probably a 3 to 5 year storm, or maybe an every other year storm. And so the reality of, I think, of trying to do something about this problem, or at least knowing, you know, maybe the, what the options are. So when the city is doing work down there or doing other things, perhaps those things can be incorporated into it, whatever the fix is for that. I do get concerned about water just flowing into the harbor. I mean, it's, you know, we're looking at, you know, there's pesticide applications across the street. There's a lot of things that go on out there. I know the water flows normally in some areas, but the idea of bringing it on and sheeting it, using that as the avenue, unless we look at some filtration, again, that slows down water while it gets filtered, so does it back up. But all those kind of things are being, are part of the new engineering, the new hydrology, the new things that, you know, the young Turks coming out of school are dealing with right now, because this is the future of what engineering is going to be about. So I'm not sure what the answer is.
I think what you're proposing is a retention pond.
Yeah.
That's off, that's offsite. So.
Yeah. That would just exactly, would go ahead and, you know, well, in the old days we were calling it Lake Sandy, and that was in the farm field across the street. You know, is, or letting that be something as an area. But again, sooner or later, the water doesn't sink down and starts flowing. And I think we're going to have to be nice to see what, at least deal with the liability issue, and then certainly engineering going up. If we determine it's in our camp, then we maybe have to start be looking at some things over the future too. So. All good. And John, your slides were well received, as and we're not just the only one. Santa Barbara Harbor is dealing with this, Channel Islands Harbor, and certainly the Port of Hueneme, you know, got, I mean, it was really telling to see their presentation. The, you know, I mean, it's hard for me to believe, but those things were down in the ground, the battery storage places and all the terminals and all the things that were hooked up, but it was there because the ships needed to be there. And so that $30 million is gone, and that system's gone, and they're going to have to build a new one. But all those kind of things are going to be to the power of 10 as we go forward. So any, so thank you.
I like the suggestion of capturing that water. Some of, I think it's private property over at Duda Farms or across the street where the Ventura Water is going to build. Yeah. Nice big retention pond over there, and let it soak into the ground. So we'll look for their design on their new building. All right. Any other comments? I think this was an informational item only. Receive a report, so we do not need any kind of vote. Todd, Brian, any final comments before we adjourn?
No, thank you very much.
Good here.
All right. We will see everybody on February 21st. And February 21st, we'll take our first look at the midterm budget. Is that true?
Yeah, typically with our midterm budget, that is a, we bring that once for review and approval.
Done. So that'll be an important meeting. We'll see everybody in 2 weeks. We stand adjourned. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.